Yeah, thank you for having me on, and good day to you, Mr. Seaton. I haven't seen you in years. I'm running for State House because I'm concerned with the direction that we're heading. I've downloaded the Handbook on Alaska State Government, which is about 100 pages, and I've been reviewing that to determine in my own mind how things are put together here. And as you know, I was born and raised in Seldovia, and borough government was introduced when I was in high school, and I never really paid a whole lot of attention to it until more recently. And I can see where the whole system has to collapse after a while because we're running out of money and running out of resources. It's not sustainable. So I'm running because we need to develop the land, which is all we have left, and get more roads and infrastructure built for the people that live here instead of bringing in the large corporations and creating these boom and bust cycles. I'd like to see a more sustainable future for all Alaska, not just Homer or anyone else. I'd like to see, things continue in a prosperous way. But the way things are going, I don't see how that's possible, because a few years ago I got a list of nonprofits from the Kenai Borough. It took me about 2 months to get the list. And you would be surprised at how many there are. I'm not talking about churches here, but a third of them are municipal corporations that work for the state and receive state paychecks. You got all your city's Chamber of Commerce, your City of Kenai, the City of Homer, City of Soldotna, City of Seldovia. They're all nonprofit corporations, you see. And they all get money from the state one way or another. And the senior centers, the prison, Wellwood Prison is a nonprofit. Alaska State Troopers are nonprofit, et cetera. Well, fast forward from the beginning of statehood, 20 years, every nonprofit has to have a director, a president, a treasurer, possibly secretary, and possibly two or three directors. And then they have employees, municipal employees, and each of these corporations has an employment identification number, an EIN number, which they put on their paychecks.
Kroll, actually, we can probably get more in-depth into that a little bit later. Just wanted to kind of give a short overview for both of you to kind of start. But what I really wanted to start on, and which is on most people's minds through the last few election cycles at least, is the budget and the state's fiscal crisis. And Kroll, I actually wanted to start with you. You've supported budget cuts and restoring the PFD. Can you expand on what you want the legislature, or how you want the legislature to close the remainder of the budget gap?
There is no way that I can see that they can do that unless they start combining some of these nonprofits that are all drawing paychecks and then are creating pension funds for their employees that have to retire after 20 years. It's a non-sustainable system that we have. Unless you can combine them and also open up more resources or build the road to Nome and increase tourism to Alaska, get more money coming in somehow. Bringing in the big oil companies to take our resources away isn't working, because now the oil's bought gone. We still got a little gas in the ground. A lot of the oil and the minerals, Kennecott Copper took tons of gold and copper out of here before statehood, and then you had the Nome gold rush, so we're losing our resources, and we're not really building any infrastructure for a sustained economy up here. If you had more roads and more access to land, we could grow our own food. You see, only 2% of the food we eat is grown here. So if we get a war in the states or something happens to the food supply in the other states, we're in big trouble. So we need to save the permanent fund and possibly have a way to get an acre of land instead of the dividend check for people that really want land. Okay. Have a box on there.
And I wanted to move to you, Seaton. You and in the bipartisan House coalition you belong to have been in control of the State House since 2016, and you guys have listed several goals, and one of the big ones was a restructuring of the permanent fund. But the other big portion of those goals was a broad-based tax, and you guys have faced your pretty severe opposition in the Senate to any kind of broad-based tax. And going into this election cycle, do you still think that's a viable route after two sessions of opposition?
Well, I'm looking forward to a Senate that gets to reality and has some changes, hopefully, because we need to move Alaska forward. And just using our savings doesn't get us there. You know, we've used our permanent fund earnings reserve now for funding some of government, but relying on that as your only income source. People have to remember that no one in Alaska is paying any tax to the state government. In other words, there's no state income tax, no state sales tax, no state property tax. And so there is no sustainable funding. All other states in the union have figured out how to make a sustainable budget. Some are overexpending. We've cut our budget by over 40% in the last 5 years. You know, you can't get there just with cuts alone and no revenue. And the other thing is that the Senate refused to reform the oil tax system, under which we are now receiving the lowest percentage of tax, production tax, that we've ever received in state history. And so we need to do several things. And but one of those is balancing our revenues with our expenditures. And we just have been unable to do that with the Senate. I do want to point out that the House Majority Coalition did pass a comprehensive sustainable budget to the Senate, and so we accomplished that goal, but we couldn't get the Senate to move on anything.
And, you know, before we move on here, we did have one question come in from Kenai Borough Assemblymember Willie Dunn, asking why candidates Sarah Vance and John Cox are not participating. And actually, I did forget to mention that at the beginning of the show. Sarah Vance declined to come on the coffee table, and Cox was scheduled to come on this Wednesday show, but had a scheduling conflict over the weekend. And so, and you know, just moving on, you know, but you guys have reasonably, you know, you've mentioned several times that you've, you know, sent this sustainable budget plan over to the Senate, and but that plan has received plenty of opposition, and it sounds like you have some hope for the makeup of the Senate to change, and maybe that might be more favorable to that plan. But, you know, are there any compromises moving away from the income tax that was proposed, which was, you know, the major sticking point?
Oh, sure. And we proposed the fourth lowest income tax in the nation as being the broad-based sustainable solution that was the cheapest to collect. Was progressive so that it didn't hit those at lower income levels, and actually was progressive. But we didn't insist on that. We said a broad-based tax that would do essentially the same. And so we were waiting, and if the Senate wanted to propose a sales tax, which Kevin Myers at the start of last year had said, or 2 years ago, said he was going to reintroduce the sales tax, that never got done. Sales taxes has a lot of complications with it because there's over 100 different sales taxes for local and municipal governments across the state. And so there's a lot of conflicts that way and how you would do it. However, I do look that, you know, there may be more impetus now that the Supreme Court has said that you can tax internet sales. And so that might be a more of an stimulus to look at a sales tax. You know, we thought that, and we still think that, a progressive income tax makes the most sense for Alaska and making sure that we have parity across all the income levels.
And Kroll, I wanted to jump back over to you on somewhat of the same question, although it sounds like you have, at least in the most recent Republican primary debate, it sounds like you had supported no new taxes. If you want to kind of expand on your particular stance on taxes, do we need a broad-based tax? If so, what would you like to see? But if not, what would you propose instead to close the remainder of the fiscal gap?
Well, I beg to differ with Mr. Seaton in that I don't feel or don't believe that a broad-based tax would even support itself. Here's why. Are we still on the air here?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you've got about 700,000 people in the state, and maybe 200,000 of them are actual taxpayers. The rest are women and children, and, you know, the earners are maybe 250, 200,000. I'm just guessing on those figures. I really don't know. But until someone can show me how collecting a broad-based tax would actually be profitable, I cannot accept it. You know, I don't believe it's possible. Here's why. Say, for example, you did collect, say, 10% of your earnings or something like that for 200,000 people, and you're taking money away from families and children and making it more hard to earn a living. However, you have to have an office building in Anchorage to review those tax forms, right? And then you've got to have employees there and possibly another building in Juneau. And what those expenses are, I don't know, but until someone can lay some numbers out in front of me to determine whether or not it's possible to even collect enough money from 200,000 people to form a broad-based tax structure, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I'm opposed to it because of those reasons. It just doesn't make any sense.
And I guess, Seaton, would you like to have a response to that?
Sure, and I appreciate that, but Hank can go online and go to the bill, House Bill 365, which was the previous version of just the income tax alone, and all the documentation is in there. The number of employees, there were no other buildings that were going to be needed. There was an upgrade on the computer system, but that was, you know, it was way cheaper than any other tax for the collection, and it had less impact on those at the lower and middle income. It was approximately 3% on the upper levels of taxation, and so there is a lot of money in Alaska. We have one of the highest average wages in the across the United States, and so all of that documentation is available online under the bill summary. So the actual data is there.
Okay. And I want to remind listeners, if you have a question for either Paul Seaton or Henry Kroll, you can call in at 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. Just please make sure you include your name so we know who is asking the question.
Well.
And, you know, just a little bit further on taxes, and we can, you know, start with you, Seaton. You indicated that you would be looking at, you know, any of the options, but, you know, you mentioned state income or state sales tax would be complicated with the municipalities and boroughs that already have their own taxes. You know, but on your website, you refer to a flat tax as a potential option, and I'm just curious if that's what the route you'd like the legislature to go is a flat tax over a more traditional income tax?
Well, we could do either one of those things, whatever we could get agreements on. So these are all up for compromise. You know, we had worked on compromises for the other bills before. It was going to be 15% of the amount you paid into the federal tax. So if you paid $10,000 in federal tax, it'd be $1,500. So that is approximately equivalent to what came out in the end. It was just much more complicated to collect as a percentage of the federal tax. So especially for non-residents that have mixtures of state and non-state income. So, you know, those documents, the documentation on all of that is available online. The Department of Revenue analysis is there. Those presentations were made to the committees in the House, and the votes were taken.
And Kroll, you've indicated that you'd be more in favor of cuts, and I'm just wanted to give you a chance to kind of expand, particularly on the cuts you would like to see or efficiencies that you think could be found within state government.
Well, just the smaller, you know. Well, anyway, let me get back to the data that they have put forth in the Department of Revenue analysis for House Bill 65. That's high in the sky data. It hasn't been implemented yet, so it hasn't got much to do with reality. It may differ considerably from what their analysis is, so you know, how accurate is it? These are the questions we need to ask ourselves. So also, you know, we've got so many little corporations, little nonprofits everywhere, and they keep growing every year exponentially, you know. And the retirement pensions for all these people are after 20 years. Another 20 years goes by, you get another whole layer of retirees, and then 60 years goes by, you run completely out of money and resources. Every state structure that was set up this way, every communist system has run out of money and resources because of the system that they have. The only solution that I can see is you got to combine some services and maybe eliminate others and just weed through there until you can bring it down to some sort of a reasonable thing that will be sustainable. And also we have to, and you know, open up the land so that people can have cheaper, like if you had a road up north, the state itself wouldn't have to pay out so much money to the villages for heating assistance and other services, because they would have jobs and they could have access to the land and the minerals themselves for the people that live here, not just big corporations, but, you know, the people, the residents that live here.
And sorry, Kroll, we actually have a caller on the line. I'd like to get to them before they hang on the line just a little bit too long, and we can continue on that topic. And we have Pat on line one. Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question. You're on the coffee table.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to thank Paul Seaton for your many, many years of dedicated service to the people of Homer and the Kenai Peninsula. My question has to do with income taxes. What is the possibility of developing an income tax system that taxes people who work in Alaska, yet they don't live here? And so, you know, I'm talking about oil workers, miners, people who come up here and fish, and then take those monies out of state. And that's my question. Thank you.
And is, just before you go, is your question directed towards Seaton or both candidates?
Well, both of them can answer the question, I guess. Yeah, that would be fine. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Pat. All right, and whoever would like to take that question first can go ahead.
Well, I had a conversation a couple days ago with a fellow that he says that if we collect an income tax from the high wage earners of the people who work on the North Slope, that it would bring in $1.3 billion, something like that, in income tax. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but since they are residents of other states, I don't see how you can tax them, because they pay income tax in their own home state of Louisiana or Texas or wherever they have to come from. So I'm not so sure you can have double taxation that way. And so it would be an exercise in futility to try to do that. I don't think it's possible. So let Mr. Seaton take care of the other side of the question here. Thank you.
Go ahead, Seaton.
Well, sure. And just on that point, it is done all the time. There's an interstate compact, and what happens is what's earned in one state can be taxed in that state, and then that's given as a credit on the income tax if you are from another state that has an income tax. And that's been our big problem on a lot of the high-wage jobs, is they pay income tax on it, but they pay it to their other state because there is no income tax in Alaska. So it doesn't mean that the workers aren't paying income tax. It just means they're paying it to a state other than where they earn their money. So, that's perfectly done across all the different states. People earn money in different states all across the United States. So that's not really a problem. And the tax that we designed was definitely to facilitate making sure that we got the full percentage from those that were non-residents of the state. So that was taken care of.
I just want to follow up on that. You mentioned in interstate agreement of some kind. Is that something that has to be worked out with states? You know, say if Alaska did implement an income tax, is that something that they would have to come to an agreement with another state on, or can that automatically be done once Alaska does have an income tax?
That's automatically done because it's gone through the court systems and all that kind of stuff. So that's all set up so that it's just an automatic that what's taxed in one state can't be double taxed by the other state. And so it's given as a credit as a mechanism of how that's done, so they don't pay it in the other state when they're filing out their income tax. What they do is they list the amount of taxes that they paid in Alaska, and then they don't pay that on in their state.
And I just want to remind listeners once again, you can call in with your question at 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. We want to give as much time as possible to listener questions for today. And you briefly mentioned it before, Seton, and you mentioned oil and gas tax credits. And, you know, I just wanted to move on to those for a minute. This year, the legislature did pass, The state has been struggling to pay out some tax credits it owes to oil companies. And as of last year, it owed about $900 million in cashable credits to oil companies. And you've pushed to reduce the amount of tax credits available to companies in Cook Inlet. The House did pass HB 247, which would have had, done some of that. But the Senate rewrote that bill, which ended up passing. And you criticized the bill for allowing smaller companies to continue receiving cashable credits up to 35% of the cost of exploration. Can you kind of elaborate on what you would like to see as far as oil and gas tax credits?
Sure. And just to distinguish between the cashable credits, those were only for the all of the companies that produce less than 50,000 barrels a day. So there's four large producers that didn't get those cashable credits. They got to deduct that same amount from the taxes that they were paying. So it's not that they didn't receive, but those weren't cashable credits. So 247 was a bill that went forward, and we in the House were trying to take care of the problem across both Cook Inlet and the North Slope. At the time, the Senate could come together on Cook Inlet and eliminate those credits but they extended the time over which those were going to be allowed, which cost us about $20 million. But they refused to do anything on the North Slope. So then this last year, in House Bill 111 that we had passed, we actually went through and got rid of the North Slope credits. So it just sometimes takes a while for the compromises to get through. Instead of doing the measure all at once, Senate takes one bite at the apple each time. And unfortunately, on House Bill 111, it had also a reforming of the tax system, which would have got us a much more fair amount of taxes from the oil companies, but that's going to be left for next year, because we could reform the tax credits, but they couldn't get to anything that touched on taxes.
And what did the House bill call for, and what would you like to see as far as the tax structure for oil companies?
Well, the tax structure was changed so that, first of all, they didn't get as high a credit. Right now, we're paying 35% of basically everything that the companies spend on the North Slope. The taxpayers of Alaska, or they're not taxpayers, but the state of Alaska ends up having to pay 35% of all those expenses through these deductions and credits. We were trying to lower that to 25%. And we were also changing the tax rates so that they were more applicable, lower at the low end of prices and higher at the higher end of prices, instead of this 4% gross tax, which is, like I say, almost by half the lowest rate that we've ever seen in the state of Alaska.
And Kroll, I wanted to throw the question over to you as far as, I'm not sure if I'm aware of your stance on oil and gas tax credits. Is that something that you think the legislature should continue taking a look at? And if so, what would you like to see?
Well, I'd like to see more better business operations with regard to dealing with oil companies. The oil companies always hire the best CEOs, the best people in business that they can find to deal with us public officials that get elected there to the various legislatures. So we wind up getting the short end of the stick a lot of times. You see, we paid $500 million to TransCanada not to build a pipeline across Canada recently, and we've also had to borrow money. I guess actually our governor wanted to borrow $1.3 billion or something like that to pay off oil companies recently, and we just, because they didn't have the money to throw out there. So, you know, we need to have better business decisions some way or another. We need to hire more people that are well-educated or more have a lot better experience in dealing with these high-powered people that work for the oil companies, you see. They always hire the best people, and we're just common folk up here in Alaska that don't understand all the tricks and ins and outs of the business. And I'm just beginning to get a grasp of this, what's going on myself, you know. I've been run a business all my life here, but the way things are going, it just blows my mind the way things are happening here. Well, money's going out the door every direction here.
Okay. And, you know, in general, as far as oil prices have been going up and could potentially help close the gap if they remain at the current price, and that has been somewhat of an argument in the legislature of whether, you know, relying on restructuring the permanent fund to use some of the earnings reserve to help pay for some government, and then also subsequently relying on oil prices to close the remainder of that gap. And Kroll, you know, while we're on the topic, maybe we'll start with you. Is that something, or is that the direction the legislature should go? While oil prices are going up right now, is that something you think the state can rely on as far as to maintain the rest of the funding for the budget?
Well, anyway, you've got the oil pipeline running at 20%, I guess, right now, or maybe a little more. And we need to make better business deals with these people that are sharks that run these various large corporations, what the main problem is right there. And also, we need to leave the permanent fund alone for the people. That's what it was intended for. In 1975, I had Jay Hammond and Bella Hammond and Clem Tillion in my living room when I lived in Halibut Cove. I lived in Halibut Cove 13 years across the bay from Homer, and I did all my shopping in Homer and commuted back and forth and grew up in Seldovia. You know, we talked about the forming of the permanent fund back then before Governor Hammond was elected governor. So, you know, I'm familiar with the history of Alaska and what it was set up for. And, you know, whenever you got a large pot of money like that, you got everybody trying to get their fingers in the pie there to grab some of it. And that's been the problem all along. And now the government itself is running a little short because of mismanagement and bad business deals. So they want to grab the permanent fund. And my solution is, we've got lots of land. Maybe if we somehow get their fingers out of the pie there and give some land away instead of the permanent fund, it will continue to grow and become double in size or become a lot more massive than what it currently is.
Okay. And I wanted to throw the same question over to you, Seat.
Well, first of all, oil taxes, like I said, are at the 4% minimum tax, which is below average price of $73 a barrel. That's all they pay, is that minimum tax. During Frank Murkowski's term of governor, the whole thing changed because we were down to 6.7% of the gross value, and that was too low. And so now we're at almost half of that. So, yes, we've got a problem. We do have a lot of retirees that were representing or were affiliated with oil companies. And so hopefully we'll get some changes coming in the Senate and the House so that we actually get a fair share for Alaska. But still, oil prices are very volatile, and relying on that to be the source of balancing totally your budget is a problem. And that's where we need a much more diversified and sustainable revenue sources to balance our expenditures. And the idea that, you know, we can just we should just do these massive road projects that cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to someplace, and then have to maintain those for some kind of potential tourism benefit is just not very sustainable. We've done some of those mega projects in the past, and very few have worked out.
And we'll get to some of the retiree tax breaks in just a little bit. And again, I just want to remind listeners, if you have a question, you can call in at 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org. And, you know, there's been a little bit of discussion here on the permanent fund. The legislature did pass some legislation restructuring the permanent fund, solving a good portion of the state's fiscal gap. And, you know, one of the other solutions that's, as far as the PFD goes, it was a 5.25% draw on the earnings reserve, and that's going to be split between both the government and dividends. And unlike other proposals, the bill didn't set a dedicated percentage that would be spent on government, which will be, you know, left up to lawmakers to define that split. And this has been somewhat of a political football over the last, you know, few years. For both of you, will that bill perpetuate that political football game? And we can start with you, Seton.
Well, each legislature has to make decisions, and trying to make decisions for the next one and block them into something, you have to pass a constitutional amendment to do that. We considered that in the House, and there was a, you know, there just wasn't the support to do that from the public. So, you know, the Senate was proposing all the time 25% would go to dividends and 75% would go to pay for government. We opposed that in the House. We were at 33%, a third instead of a quarter, and that made quite a bit of difference. We were able to get the Senate up off of their $1,000 dividend to $1,100 2 years ago, and then up to $1,600 this last year. So we added $500 to the previous year's dividend. But those are appropriations that need to be made by our Constitution. And so, you know, we can tell future legislatures what we think they ought to do, but it is up to every legislature to actually pass an appropriation bill to spend the money. So unless there's a constitutional amendment that changes our Constitution and says that the legislature doesn't appropriate money, then it's automatically done. This is the system that our Constitution outlines.
Okay, and we do have a caller on the line. Robert, we'll get to you in just a minute here. I wanted to give Kroll a chance to answer that same question.
Well, we need to leave the permanent fund alone. They don't have to keep dipping into it. And Mr. Seton brought up the road project to Nome that I mentioned before. That was surveyed in 1948, and they had the equipment to finish that road and connect it up with the Alcan Highway. But apparently it was all scuttled at the end of the war, and all those bulldozers and barges and everything wound up on the bottom of the ocean off of Nome. The boat I used to own would go up there and salvage those 135-foot landing craft, sometimes two every year. Rocky would go up there and refloat them. I've written two letters to Donald Trump. That road would have been built in about 8 more months. The Elkhorn Highway was built in less than 9 months by soldiers, and I think we could probably build that road with soldiers. We've got 900 military bases in 130 countries around the world. Bring some of the boys home, they could whip that out in 9 months or 8 months, finish the road, and it's all mostly on federal land anyway, so it wouldn't cost the state anything hardly to do. And maybe some of the feds could maintain part of it because it's for security to national security for, you know, for the state itself, for repelling invasion from someone. Who knows?
Well,
basically, double insurance, and you could drive it to Russia, maybe get a ferry system going over there, and drive across.
Yeah. I wanted to bring you back to the question,
Railroad.
If you want to
quadruple tourism and also give people jobs. You have the villagers and
Kroll,
cheaper
fuel. I just want to bring you back to the question, though, as far as the permanent fund, though. We can get on to that. I do want to get to the caller on the line here in just a second. So if you want to quickly, you know, answer as far as the split between, I understand you are against the permanent fund, so it might be better just to ask, or would you be in favor of repealing that bill that allowed the state to pull from the earnings reserve?
Well, like Mr. Seaton said, in order to really take the money and use it for the state, they need a constitutional amendment to modify the constitution of the state of Alaska, and that requires a large percentage vote there. And I'm against taking the money out of the permanent fund in the first place because I don't think they can need it. If they really put their nose to the grindstone, they could probably figure out a way not to use the permanent fund. But because the money is just sitting there, it's easy, you know, to try to grab it. And they owe us, the people here, not just for the 1 year that they took half the dividends, but a couple of previous years also. It's been halved. About 20 years ago, they cut the dividend in half so that it would grow the permanent fund quicker. I don't know if anybody was around here at the time. I think it was 25 years ago that they did that, if you remember right, and go back in time there. So the government, as far as I know, the money's still sitting there, what Mr. Walker took out of the permanent fund, and I don't know if they've used it or not. I don't think they can use it over.
Okay. I just want to get to the caller on the line. And Robert, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Hi there, thank you. So there was some discussion earlier about maybe to some degree relying on a spike in oil prices to patch up some of the budget deficit that still exists, the $2.4 billion that's remaining, I think it is. And I and possibly some other people are getting the sense that that's unsustainable, relying on the boom and bust economy to keep our state afloat. As a university student, I'm certainly getting tired of having the state being thrown into disarray and wondering where our money is going to come from as soon as oil prices go down. So my question is specifically, what does the next 15 or 20 years look like for restructuring our revenue system and the way we rely on our economy more generally towards leaning off oil dependence? Because the opponents of Paul Seaton seem to be really frustrated with the income tax and taking away the PFD. So I want to know what the alternative is. I want to know specifically what it looks like to stop relying on a boom and bust economy and getting back to being out of billions of dollars in deficit for years to come.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Thanks for your question. And Kroll, if you want to take that first. And also, let's we only have about 17 minutes left, so let's try to limit some of responses for both Seaton and you, Kroll. So, Kroll, go ahead.
Well, I don't see any doom and gloom for the immediate future. However, next year will be the 60th year, and no system that's set up like this has lasted more than 60 years. 60 years, you know, since statehood was 1959, and 2019 will be the 60-year mark, so we really need to concentrate on cutting the size of our governments and maybe restructuring some of these little corporations so that they're double up and maybe eliminate some services that are totally unnecessary, like picking up buoys off the beach and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to take plastic and buoys off the beach and just allow people to pick up their own fishing gear and buoys off the beaches. You know, we got so many things on, you can't even list them all, hardly. The people are being paid, the money just going out of the Treasury. The Treasury Department writes 17,000 checks a month, from what I understand, and a lot of them are large checks, and they go to all the little municipal corporations, and then they have their own EIM owners, their own employees, and their own people that retire every 20 years.
And
they keep growing and growing and growing, and pretty soon you got this massive retirement community. Some of them have died out, but you know, they're not really doing anything. They're doing the same job that the first six or eight people were doing in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Kroll, I actually wanted to follow up. When you were referring to municipal corporations, are you referring to boroughs and municipalities?
Well, let me list a few of them. You got the Chamber of Commerce. It's a municipal corporation. The Wildwood Prison is the City of Seward, the City of Kenai, the City of Saldovia, the City of Homer. They're all corporations. Okay, some of them are home rule, like Anchorage.
Are you saying that the state should cut funding?
All these little things, the senior centers, you know, they all get money from the state.
Are you saying the state should end its revenue sharing with municipalities? I'm just trying to.
Well, we've got so many of them; they keep growing every year. We need to weed through them and cut the chaff. Is the only way we can possibly have a sustainable future. Mm-hmm. And then we need to have more jobs. And the only way I can see that happening is we got to have more land in the private hands and start growing our own food, and producing more of our own products, and maybe growing hemp and making clothing and graphene and batteries and sort of things in Alaska, have things going on here instead of importing everything.
Okay, and we have a limited amount of time, so I wanted to throw that question, our listener's question, back over to Seton.
Thank you. And Robert, I think your question was looking at the deficit and a $2.4 billion. That's a $2.4 billion deficit we would have had if we did not use some of the money from the earnings reserve or the permanent fund in a structured way. And there was not enough money in the constitutional budget reserve and the statutory budget reserve to pay that amount of money. In other words, we could not do it without using some money from the earnings reserve or passing some taxes or some oil tax increases. And so that's the situation we were in. And so with the $1.7 billion that came from the earnings reserve, that meant that we were left with about $600 million that was available to take out, and we had that much that we could take out of the constitutional budget reserve, which is our basically state checking account. So that there are no ways other than diversifying our revenue. We've already cut expenses 40% from 2015. That's the capital budget and the operating budget by about 20%, and about 3,000 less state workers than there were back then. So, you know, there is no magic, and when people are wanting magic, it's really hard to figure out how you're going to get there.
Sure. I think Robert's question more pertained to kind of a longer look down the road, as far as, you know, those are some of the solutions that have been proposed for more immediate fixes, as far as, you know, the House's plan and Senate's agreement on the restructuring of the permanent fund and relying on some of the oil revenue. But as far as, you know, he referred to 15, 20 years down the road, does that look different as far as what you see the state needing to do?
Well, sure. I mean, looking at the volatile oil prices, we can't rely on that. So we need something that is like all of the other states have done, which is sustainable, that is based on other income to the state, whether that's income tax, sales tax, state property tax, something. None of those exist today.
Sure. I think the biggest fear, though, from a lot of critics of you know, broad-based tax here in Alaska is I think a lot of them see it as somewhat of a slippery slope. So as far as, you know, an income tax would come now and that would grow over time, you know, do you think the income tax, at least that the House proposed, is sustainable over, you know, that 15 to 20 years that Robert had referred to?
I do. I think we had a plan with changing oil taxes as well. So we got some more from that side, and lowering our expenses by cutting the tax credit amounts actually balanced our budget over the long term.
Okay. And I want to remind listeners, if you have a question, we have just about 10 minutes left. So please get your calls in now if you do have a question. Again, the number is 235-7721. You can also email info@kbbi.org, and please include your name so we know who is asking the question. And, you know, we were on the topic of the PFD, you know, and there is some concern that the remainder of the budget gap, which is somewhat of a moving target, will likely need to be filled with the constitutional budget reserve, which could be depleted if continued to be relied upon if oil revenue does not cover the gap. You know, and that would leave the permanent fund earnings reserve to draw from, which could potentially increase the amount of money that goes towards government from that 5.25% draw on the earnings reserve. And, you know, that potentially could reduce dividends, which is a concern for many voters. Is that a concern for either of you? And does the legislature need to revisit that bill in any way? And why don't we start with you, Seton, and then try to keep responses short so we can get as many questions in with the time we have left.
Sure. It's always a concern. And the concern is that the legislature needs to take actions so that we balance our diversify our revenues so it's not just on one source. And that's been a problem that we have had getting through the Senate to address any of those things, even as the motor fuel tax, which is the lowest in the nation and hasn't been changed since 1978. So, you know, yes, we need to change things and we need to look at diversifying our revenues.
Okay, Kroll, and please keep your response short as possible. Thanks.
Only 1% of the land in Alaska is privately owned. Only 1%. So if we had more land in the private hands, it would increase the number of people out there working, and we'd all have jobs, and it would increase the amount of money coming in and also increase the tax base for the borough. They would have more taxes coming in, and it would solve most everybody's problems. You wouldn't have to use the income reserve, the budget reserve, or the permanent fund, because we'd be a self-sustaining state. We could get more factories to produce some of the things that are grown on the land. The state of Alaska has 3 million acres on the Kenai Peninsula, and possibly about 2 million acres of it could be used to produce something, fish, wheat, or not wheat, but, you know, root vegetables and livestock of some kind, goats, pigs, sheep, cows, etc., ducks, geese, and also increase the areas where people could mine minerals out of the ground. We just got to get more land into private hands. Only 1% is in private hands, and this would produce a self-sustaining economy for the state of Alaska. The borough itself has two homesteads, 160-acre homesteads in Homer that could be used to grow food down there.
Sure. Kroll, I'm sorry. We have limited time left, and we do have a caller on the line, and I do want to give priority to some of those callers. We have Ted on the line. Ted, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question. And
I just was curious when you were talking about an income tax. I was curious whether there's any figures that defines what kind of revenue is taken out of the state by non-resident employees, not only in the oil industry but in the fishery industry. If there's any mechanism that that kind of dollar amount has ever been tracked, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Seton, you can go ahead.
Sure, and that has been looked at. We've got pretty good numbers on that, and that is available if you go to the bills.
I'm almost done here.
Oh, sorry, Kroll, just remember you are on the air. Sorry, Seton, go ahead.
Sorry about that.
So anyway, yes, those figures have all been worked out, and you can find that in the backup to the bill that was passed.
Okay. And, you know, there was a little bit of reference to it earlier in the show, and I wanted to just touch on it before we have to go. Senior exemptions, particularly on property tax, you know, the state mandates that the boroughs and municipalities exempt seniors from paying property taxes on the first $150,000 of value on their home. And when the program was first created, the state did reimburse boroughs and municipalities for that cost, the cost of those exemptions, and it no longer does so. So for both of you, is that something the state should continue to require boroughs and municipalities to maintain, or is it something that needs to be revisited? And Kroll, if we want to start with you, and we only have about 5 minutes left, so please keep your answer brief.
I don't believe that the state has any authority over what the borough does in that regard. It's the borough assemblies that determine how to balance their budgets in the borough. They're separate from the state, as far as I know. Go ahead.
Okay, Seton.
Oh, well, there is a state mandate that's $150,000, and it also is permissive that they can optionally go up to $300,000, which the Kenai Peninsula Borough has done. So that's there. You know, I listened to constituents. The city of Homer 2 years ago, 2016, sent me a resolution asking us to consider making all of that optional. You know, I listened to my constituents put in a bill. We had several hearings on that. There wasn't support for moving that forward. But the people got a chance to have the idea aired in committee, Community and Regional Affairs, that I sat on. There were several hearings there, and that didn't move forward. So I don't think that there is an appetite for removing that exemption.
Okay, and we have just about 4 minutes left, and I would like to pose this for both of you, and why don't we start with you, Seton? You did indicate, though, about some kind of exemptions for seniors in reference to retirees. If you wanted to expand on that, you touched on it briefly earlier in the show, if I do recall correctly.
I'm not sure which we're talking about there. I mean, we did have that bill we just talked about that was introduced, the retirement system, if we're talking about that. You know, we did convert in 2006 from a defined benefit system, which can generate these unfunded liabilities that we're dealing with now, to a defined contribution system, so that it's much more solvent on future state decisions.
Okay. And, you know, and with the time we do have left, why don't we can go with some closing comments. And Kroll, if you want to go ahead, we have just about 2 minutes left.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the air. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to all the residents in Homer. And I'm really hoping that you really consider that your vote is not just important to the city of Homer, it's possibly important to the entire state of Alaska, because it sets a policy where the other legislatures, you know, will talk about it and get some more ideas in that are fresher and possibly maybe solve some of our current problems. And, you know, I'd like to see us Alaska become more self-sustaining. In some ways, we have lots of land and some minerals left, and we, you know, we can't just keep these boom and bust cycles going because the money disappears too frequently, and have to be more conservative in our dealings, especially with our business dealings.
Okay. And Seton, we have just a minute or so left.
Thank you, and thank everybody for listening this morning. I am running as a nonpartisan again. For the State House, and I believe in a rational fiscal plan that diversifies our revenues so we can balance our budget. I've worked extremely hard on making sure that we preserve the quality of our schools, both through funding and through other initiatives, as well as initiatives on healthcare to try to lower the costs of healthcare in Alaska. That's a whole topic unto itself, and we really need to do that because that's the biggest hit on our budget. So I would like to ask people to support me, going back to Juneau, to continue listening to them, doing the weekly email newsletters so that you can be involved. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay, and thank you both for joining us, and also just wanted to remind listeners that candidate Sarah Vance, who's running in the Republican primary, declined to come on our show today, and John Cox, who's also running in the Republican primary, was scheduled but had a scheduling conflict. And that is all the time we have for the coffee table. Thanks to you both again. You're listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next.